You're listening to Epitaph, The Others. The Others is a special Epitaph production created exclusively for our Patreon subscribers. This is episode 3, The Ghost of West Virginia's Country Roads.
I don't think it would be unfair to say that West Virginia is a weird place. The entire state is within the Appalachian Mountain Range, meaning that all of its terrain is wooded mountains, hills, and valleys. While it's full of small towns, even its biggest cities are small by most standards, with its capital, Charleston, having just under 50,000 people living there. It's a coal mining state, which has driven people in fairly large numbers to the remote mountainsides to dig mines and mine tunnels. The superstitions and folklore of immigrants from England, Ireland, Scotland, Germany, and Italy have combined with a diverse blend of Native American lore. And as the paranormal is normally encountered in remote, lonely areas, it's no surprise that it has found a home in West Virginia. If cryptids are your thing, it has them. With the mountains and the forest, there are plenty of Sasquatch sightings, but there are also other creatures, like the Grafton Monster, the Sheep Squatch, the White Fangs, strange feline creatures, demon dogs, werewolves, and even the Snallygaster. It also has UFO sightings, and it has cryptids that may be connected to UFO sightings, like the Flatwoods Monster or the Mothman. And of course, it has ghosts. For more than 75 years, people have been reporting a ghostly hitchhiker on Fifth Street Road in Huntington, West Virginia. Fifth Street Road is a 3-lane blacktop road that serves as the main traffic way between Huntington and the towns of Lavalette and Wayne to the south. Traveling north from Wayne, it makes a long, steep descent down Fifth Street Hill where it crosses Four Pole Creek on the southern side of Huntington before entering the city. According to an article in Huntington Quarterly in 1999, the first published report of an encounter with the ghost appeared in a Huntington paper on October 30, 1942. A few days before the article was published, a driver for the Black and White Cab Company had dropped a passenger off at a dance hall on Fifth Street Road about 4:30 a.m., and then started back toward Huntington. When I got to the top of the hill, a girl hailed me from the roadside. I stopped, opened the door, and she got in the rear seat. It was pretty cold, but she did not have any coat or hat on, just a skirt and a thin blouse. I thought that was funny and said, "It's pretty cold without a coat, isn't it?" And she replied, "I haven't worn a coat for 9 or 10 years. I asked the girl where she was going, and she told me to let her off at the bottom of the hill. I drove down the hill about 20 or 25 miles an hour, stopped at a house, and turned around to collect my fare and let the girl out. She wasn't sitting in the seat. I thought maybe she had fainted or something and fell off the seat, so I looked down on the floor, but nobody was there. I looked back up the road and couldn't see anybody, so I drove back to taxi headquarters. I said to the dispatcher, "I've just been gypped out of a quarter," and I told him what had happened. He said he had heard of that same thing happening to a yellow cab driver about a year before in that same place. The reporter then managed to track down a yellow cab driver who confirmed that he had heard an almost identical experience the year before. He'd been told the story by his cousin when they were both working for the company. She'd been dubbed by cabbies as the Ghost Girl of Fifth Street Hill. Another article about the Ghost Girl appeared 16 years later in November of 1958. According to that article, the girl never says a word and she disappears like a puff of smoke when it reaches the stoplight at the bridge over Four Pole Creek. But it also may have been the first article to give the supposed origin of the young woman. Quite a few years ago, a Huntington couple took their daughter and her fiancé to Wayne to be married. It was in the early spring, just the season for marriages, and the wedding went off without a hitch. However, on their way back, rain started coming down in a slow drizzle, the kind that makes roads slick. At the foot of the hill, just before coming to the bridge at the corner of Fifth Street and the Boulevard, the car overturned and the bride was killed. Ever since then, but especially in the early spring and only when it's raining, the bride appears on the hill, standing at the top wearing her white dress, and she thumbs a ride from passing motorists. That article then goes on to report that someone had tried to ignore the bride a couple years before, but that his car engine stopped, the lights went out, and his radio shut off. When he got out to investigate, the bride ran down the hill, and as she disappeared, his car came back on. In 1977, John Fields, a student at Marshall University, recorded a piece of folklore from a retired Milton resident who told a story that was very similar to the original, but with an ending that more closely fits with the traditional vanishing hitchhiker legend. A cab driver came along somewhere out on Fifth Street Hill, and this woman dressed in a wedding gown with no coat on flagged him down. He said, "Where to?" and she gave him an address somewhere in West Huntingdon. He said to her, "Aren't you cold out with no coat on?" And she said, "I don't get cold." And he drove down there and parked at the number she'd given him, and he looked back to let her out and nobody was there. Well, he got his hair all raised up, so he knocked at the door and an old lady came to the door. He says, "Lady, I've had a terrible experience that I can't figure out," and he told her what had happened. She said, "That's my daughter." She said that she'd died, and she added that she comes back every 4 years. The cab driver got out of there and quit his job. When Joseph Platania wrote about the ghost for an issue of the Huntingdon Quarterly in 1999, he interviewed Bob Cook, the office manager for the company that ran the yellow cabs of Huntingdon, and who'd also once been a cab driver himself. Cook said that he hadn't heard anything about the ghost girl of Fifth Street Hill for about a dozen years. Cook said that the story had been repeated often years ago, though, and that the drivers of the Greyhound and Trailways buses also used to report picking up the young woman on Fifth Street Hill. She'd board their buses and then, when it stopped at the bottom of the hill, she'd disappeared. Many of the newer cab drivers, though, had never heard of the ghost girl, and Platania speculated as to whether or not she'd thumbed her last ride down Fifth Street Hill. But the ghost girl of Fifth Street Hill isn't the only vanishing hitchhiker in West Virginia. Another of the legends takes place in the unincorporated community of Muddledy in Nicholas County. According to Patty Wilson's book, Haunted West Virginia, in the early 1930s during the height of the Great Depression, a traveling salesman by the name of Hank Collier was driving his route along muddy backcountry roads. The creeks were running high due to almost a week of incessant spring rains, and it was still raining. It was late afternoon when he first saw her, a young woman in a heavy coat beside the road. He, of course, offered her a ride and she accepted. She shuddered from the cold, wet weather as she climbed into the passenger seat, and she thanked him for stopping. "I thought for sure I'd have to walk all the way home," she said. She lived just up the road, she said, but they'd have to take a bit of a detour because the high water had washed the bridge out. Hank wasn't excited about it. Driving too far out of the way meant wasting time and gasoline, both of which were precious in his line of work. But the young girl beside him was pretty, with her blonde curls and big brown eyes, and she was friendly, making conversation as she guided him on a detour that would take them around the washed-out bridge and back onto his route. It was evening by the time they pulled into her driveway, so Hank said goodbye and watched her run toward the house before hurrying on his way to finish up the rest of his business. A few miles further down the road, he stopped at a small grocery store and went inside to talk to the shop owner. Several older men were gathered around the wood stove in the corner, stoking a fire that kept the shop warm. During conversation about the weather and the state of the roads, Hank mentioned the washed-out bridge and his luck in having picked up a young woman who knew a detour. By the time he'd finished, he had the attention of the room. One of the old men asked Hank to describe the girl, and though he couldn't understand why that was important, he did. And then the old man asked if she'd given him a name. "I think she said her name was Ida Crawford," Hank said. "Do you know her?" The old man nodded and offered Hank a chair. "You may want to sit down." The man started his story by telling that Ida had grown up around there, a pretty girl, long blonde hair and big brown eyes, and she had a smile so friendly that you couldn't help but smile back. She used to drive around in a buggy that her dad had built her. It was about this same time of year when the snow melt and heavy spring rains flooded the streams that Ida was on her way home from visiting a friend in her buggy when the bridge, the same one that she'd warned Hank had washed out, collapsed while she was trying to cross it. They found the wreckage of her carriage downstream a ways, but they never found her. "That was 25 years ago now," the old man said. A couple years after Ida was lost, he said, another young man had come through and told a story just like Hank's. It was about this same time of year when the water was high and the rain just wouldn't stop. Said that he'd been driving along the road, and Ida flagged him down. He picked her up and she showed him the detour. And when he got to her house, he'd found that she'd died a few years earlier. Some years later, during another rainy spring, the bridge had washed out again, and another young man had been rerouted around it and came in and told the same story. They told Hank that he was the third person that they knew of who said that she'd kept him from trouble on the bridge after it had washed out. After Hank wrapped up his business, he got back in his car. He wasn't sure whether he believed the old man's story or not. The seat where the young woman had sat was still wet, and she certainly didn't seem like any ghost. And he wouldn't put it past the old men to make a joke at his expense. But if it was a joke, none of them had laughed. There was really only one way that he could know for sure. He retraced the route back to the house where he dropped her off. When he pulled up, the house was completely dark. but it wasn't uncommon for people to go without electricity. So he got out of his car and went to the door, only to find that it was slightly ajar. When he pushed it open a bit further, the light from his headlights revealed animal tracks in the dirt that had accumulated on the floors. Between that and the abandoned furniture, it quickly became apparent that nobody had lived there in years. A chill ran down his spine, and he didn't much feel like looking for Ida anymore. With stories with such specific details, we believed that it would be easy to trace them down to their roots, but we were wrong. The story of the Ghost Girl of Fifth Street Hill, written up by Joseph Platania for the autumn 1999 edition of the Huntington Quarterly, features specific dates for the newspaper articles it cites. Though the legend of the ghost being a bride who died tragically returning from her honeymoon didn't appear until several years later, according to Platania's citations, there were no records in the limited selection of digitized West Virginia newspapers of any accident that would match that story. In fact, apart from mentions of winter sledding accidents, all of which the children involved survived, thankfully, there were no mentions in any of the newspapers of any accidents at all. Those newspapers likely exist somewhere, but where they don't exist, at least not yet, is in any digitized archive available online, including the U.S. Library of Congress's Chronicling America. The story of Ida Crawford came from the book Haunted West Virginia, Ghosts and Strange Phenomena of the Mountain State by Patty A. Wilson. The author made time to talk with us about her story and confirmed that she had heard the story as a local legend and spoke with local historians to confirm specific details of it. We were also able to speak with a few people at the Nicholas County Historical Society, near where the story of Ida Crawford is said to take place, but though they were familiar with the legend, they were unable to recount any specific details of bridges having washed out or of any women who may have died as a result. And again, the lack of digitized West Virginia newspapers meant that that search came up empty as well. We did, however, find the legend, including the name Ida Crawford as the woman who had drowned when the bridge washed out, told in Ruth Ann Music's book Coffin Hollow and Other Ghost Tales, which was first published in 1977. She credits the story as being told to her by Richard Browning in 1965, so it's been around for more than 50 years. Looking through genealogical records, we found that there was a woman named Ida Crawford who had taught at the Tyrconnell School in Taylor County in 1908. So that puts a woman of the same name in the region around the same time that her death is said to have occurred there. It could be that this is the same person, but Taylor County is about 2 hours north of Nicholas County, and I can't find any death records for her. But if, as the story suggests, her body was never found, it's plausible that no record exists, especially if she died in a small, unincorporated mountain town. Music's book included a number of other vanishing hitchhiker legends from around the state, too. Some of the tales she'd collected were relatively standard fare, such as the story of a young World War I veteran, Uncle Joe Marchio, celebrating the end of the war at a dance in Shinston with a young woman named Jane McQueen. He gave her his sweater when he walked her home and kissed her goodnight, only to return the next morning and be told that she had died a year before. According to the tale, retold by his nephew John in 1967, he went to the cemetery where her father said she'd been buried and found the sweater on her grave. Another story was shared by Larry Torchia of Clarksburg in 1965. A priest had told him of another priest who'd found two old women walking home in the rain and offered them a ride. He'd been invited inside, sat by their fire, and enjoyed tea and muffins with them late into the evening. The next day, he returned to the house to retrieve a breviary that he had left behind, only to find that the door had been boarded up. After investigating, he wound up at the local real estate agent's office to inquire about the house. The agent had, having been tasked years ago with selling the house, had this all happen before. He drove the priest back out to the house, pried away the boards, and unlocked the front door. His breviary was sitting on a dusty table beside cake crumbs that attested to the previous night's visit. The agent explained that the house had belonged to a pair of spinster sisters who had been known for their hospitality. After they'd died, he'd been unable to sell the house, but they'd still been known to occasionally invite people in for tea. Another tale, told near Fairmont in 1968, was the story of a young married couple whose car fell over a steep bank on their way home from a date. Their families were worried, of course, but suspected that they had run away to get married, something they'd often spoken of. A few weeks went by without word, but people driving a narrow old road began reporting seeing the figure of a woman in white, waving frantically for them to stop, only to disappear when they did. One night, a coal miner who'd stopped decided to look for the girl after she disappeared. He found the wrecked car and the couple dead inside it. The ghost girl wasn't ever seen again. We dug into each of these stories as best we could, but despite the stories often including specific names or details, were they named the names told to them by the ghosts or discovered on tombstones, we were unable to find anything to corroborate the tales. It was another story from Music's collection of folklore that caught our attention, though. A dozen chapters before her retelling of the legend of Ida Crawford redirecting a young man around the washed-out bridge in Nicholas County, she shares a story told by Myra Townsend from the Huntington area in 1963. Myra's father had a friend named Carl, who worked as a cab driver in Huntington in the 1930s during the Great Depression. Carl was known for his kindness and would often pick up people who were unable to pay their fares. In fact, he'd made such a habit of not collecting from those who were unable to pay that the cab company had put him on probation. One night, he'd been given an address by dispatch, but when he arrived, there was no one living in the home. Thinking dispatch had written the address down wrong, he headed back to town. After driving a quarter of a mile or so, he saw a young woman in the road, waving for him to stop. She wasn't dressed for the December weather. She didn't wear a coat, and her long white organdy dress rippled around her legs in the cold wintry wind. So Carl stopped to see if she was all right, and she asked if he could give her a ride into town. He was reluctant, of course. She wasn't carrying a purse, and if he took another non-paying passenger, he'd lose his job. But even so, he couldn't leave her beside the road in the cold. During the ride into town, she was talkative. Her name was Karen, she said. She'd been to a birthday party, but was in a hurry to get home. Carl figured that she must have forgotten her coat at the party. He arrived at her house, but before he could get around to open her door, she was gone. Concerned, both for the girl and his job if he went back having not collected another fare, Carl went to the door. Her parents told him that their daughter had died in an automobile accident on her way back from a birthday party several years before. When he got back to the cab station, there was a message waiting for him from Karen, thanking him for his kindness. And, according to Myra Townsend's father, Carl was promptly fired for not collecting the fare.
You have been listening to Episode 3, The Ghost of West Virginia's Country Roads. The content of this podcast is copyright Epitaph Incorporated, 2019, all rights reserved.